Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Okay, everybody, it's time for a game. I'll sing my song and you do just what the song says. Here we go. Rub your tummy just like this. Rub it all day long. Rub your tummy, rub it hard while we sing our song.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Growing Good on Heritage Radio Network. Lots of exciting things happening at the station. We just went non-for-profit, which is awesome. Today's show I am dedicating to my first school experience. Of course, my son Wallace Rainbow just turned two. Many of my returning listeners know that. And last year at the winter session, I decided that it was time for us to, you know, get involved in the educational system. I was not ready to send him off somewhere without me because, I mean, he is in the 95th percentile, so his body is actually like a three-year-old. But he really, you know, at the time was only a year and a half old, and I wasn't comfortable with that separation between us. But at the same time, I could tell from him, and, you know, your child is your greatest teacher, that he was ready to have more than I could give him in our home environment and a bit of socialness in his life, as well as I was also ready to learn more about what I could do with my child at home. And I had questions, and with his speech developing and just patterns that he would have with other children at the playground, I realized that, you know, I had a lot of learning to do too. So what we found in our community was the Brooklyn Waldorf Academy. It was amazing. I'm here today to share with you the experiences. I'm going to tell you about our experiences, then I'm going to tell you facts about Waldorf, and then I'm actually going to be letting you know about a fundraiser that they're having this month. That's going to be the parameters of our segment today. So we went for a tour, which I highly recommend for all parents to do. They were very nice. You should always, you know, kind of just go and be an observer for any situation that you decide, you know, to decide if it's right for you and your kid. So I went with my friend Melissa McAllister. We took our kids. They were very nice. They gave us a whole tour. And basically, Waldorf, it's very different than Montessori. Their whole basis is on imagination and observing and imitating with the parents. So for Wally's age, we did the parent-child class, which is that you go, it's 2.5 hours long, and you can go as many times as you want a week. We were going Wednesdays and Fridays. After that, you move on to a program called Bridge, which I haven't done yet, so I can't really speak for what actually it entails, but apparently it's, you know, when there's more separation with the parents. And then the school continues all the way, I believe, to the eighth grade, but it's different in every city. Anyways, I loved it. So the first thing that I noticed when we went to the class, obviously, is that in the parent-child program, it's so sweet. And of course, being from a cooking network, I was really able to appreciate this. The class begins with just a greet, and there's a little corridor, and they teach the children to sit down and take their shoes off and take their jackets off, and then you do the same. And then you go inside, and once everybody's like arrived and settled down, they bake bread. All the children sit down, and there's like a Waldorf bread recipe that the schools all unite on, and the children bake bread, and they sprinkle the flour, and we sing songs about baking the bread, and then the bread bakes throughout the rest of the class, and the class then ends with all the children sitting around the table and eating the bread that they made. So the smells and the with all your senses, it was just so awesome. So that was the first thing that I was like, well, I want to do that. I want to bake bread with my son and all these beautiful children and their parents. So that was really amazing. A little bit about the rest of Waldorf, I'll read you from some of my research. Basically, in early childhood, the Waldorf teacher or big person, which is you if you are involved in the parent-child program, creates a warm, nurturing environment in which learning takes place through imitation and experimentation. The big person engages in domestic, practical, and artistic activities that the children can readily imitate, like baking, painting, gardening, crafting, building, and handicrafts, adapting the work to changing seasons and events. The big person also stimulates imaginations through storytelling and free play, or what they like to call fantasy play. Free play encourages kids to act out their own scenarios and experience various aspects of life at multiple levels. Natural toys are encouraged by Waldorf Academy because they require more imagination than prefabricated toys with specific outcomes. Little people are also encouraged to collect natural materials and use them in play scenarios. So this was the second thing that I noticed on my tour, and then once again throughout the winter session, was that their toys in the classroom are things like pine cones, and acorns, or rocks, and spools, colored pencils, fabrics. They just have baskets of logs and twigs, bean bags, beeswax, straw, yarn, stumps from outside, bells, buttons, paintbrushes. I'm reading here, I saw all of this, but I'm actually reading a list of like Waldorf approved toys. Pebbles, they play with tree branches, watercolors, notebooks, woven baskets, fabric, bags, wooden furniture, shells, wool, wooden balls, dolls, and feathers. So that is what made up the classroom that we entered every day, along with like, so basically, just to explain to you what that means, because it's so far out, but it was so, so amazing to interact with. They would have like a basket of beautiful colored silk scarves, per se. They were fabric, but they were, you know, like scarves, and they were all folded in a basket, and the children would just approach them and do what they wanted with. So some days some of the kids would make teepees with them, other days they would tie them on and make capes, I liked to, when we would play, you know, imaginary boat time, like I'd take the blue ones and whirl them around the children and use them as if they were water. So it's very interesting, and I'm definitely sold on the whole experience. I can't wait to go back. So that's some of the tools. As the children grow older, their brains develop to seek more abstract matters, and Waldorf includes writing, reading, and arithmetic. In Waldorf, the process by which abstract thinking is discovered and cultivated matters more than the result. The little person engages in various cultural activities that draw on the imaginative faculties, including drawing, painting, poetry, drama, singing, playing a musical instrument, and so on. A continuing sense of wonder and awe for nature and life underlies the teaching methods and activities. Waldorf-loving big people believe that this sense of awe and wonder will develop into a feeling of reverence, laying a firm foundation for a respectful treatment of the natural environment in later life. A sense of awe is always a good starting point for critical thinking. So what I also saw from my experiences was that it was just very like, they have songs for everything about fairies, and then they light a candle and there's a song about the fire fairy, and then they have a song for goodbye to the fire fairy. They just have all these rhymes, and I was so impressed because all the parents that had obviously been a part of Waldorf for a lot longer than I was, all showed up prepared, and they all knew the lyrics. And so without any kind of like 1, 2, 3, go, you know, or like, this is what we're doing now, the teacher would just start singing a song and the other parents would pick up on it and chime in. And it was just, it's all about like very peacefulness, but also just letting the kids make their way through the class, and they tell us what's going to happen. And it's not like, now you paint, now you draw, now we nap. That's pretty much from all my research and my experiences, what I've realized is the big key to Waldorf, that and nature. So they had all these outside elements indoors, which was very cool. In Waldorf education, each day of the week also has an associated color. Monday's color is purple, Tuesday's color is red, Wednesday's color is yellow, Thursday's color is orange, Friday's color is green, and Saturday's color is blue, and Sunday's color is white. This can be a delightful organizing sensory theme for little people of all ages. Since the imagination plays such a large role, toys tend to be simple items collected in baskets and jars that can be used however the child imagines. And I started doing this at home. For example, in Wally's class, they had... I would have never known this because I'm raising a boy, but they had, you know, lots of cribs and handmade dolls that perhaps parents had knitted and donated, and blankets and doll-sized items. And I saw my son, Wally, really, really draw to this. He was so drawn to taking care of the baby and putting the baby to bed and rocking the baby and covering him or her with the blanket. And I would have never, you know, I'm raising a boy. I would have never thought that maybe this was something we could utilize at home. But I did. I found a crib when I was salvaging for my thrift business. I sanded it, I lacked it, and I bought him. I let him pick a baby doll when we were in a thrift store, and I bought like a little fake bottle. And it's something that we do every day now, is take care of this baby, which is something that Hel Heckman, who Hel is a founder and director of Noken, a Waldorf daycare center in Denmark for children ages 1 through 7 that has served as an inspiration to Waldorf kindergartens and nurseries worldwide. She recently completed a 3-month tour of Waldorf early childhood programs throughout North America, and many of the schools in America are based and follow in her footsteps. So I downloaded an interview, and one of the things that she speaks about is that there needs to be more caregiving in the child's environment, like feeding a baby or preparing food, and that she sees a lot of this with animals and the children, but that it's lost in the actual person to person. So this is something that Waldorf encourages, and I didn't even know this. I had not read this article when I actually witnessed this for myself and brought it into our home. And then as I was researching for the show, I read that, you know, this is actually something that they find very important. So I'm going to read to you a little bit from an interview with Hel Heckman. She was asked, you know, what are some of the special considerations you'd like parents and caregivers to keep in mind about the very youngest children? And she says, little children are not little adults. They are very special. Children under 3 are not small kindergartners. They need a lot of time to observe their world, then an invitation to be one with the world. It is so important that those who care for the child know how much they affect the child. They need to be very aware of themselves as role models, not only in their doing, but in being a moral and spiritual person. Those who work with little children should actually be the most spiritually developed persons. The little child feels everything the adult contains. The child imitates the movement and also the mood. If there is not a correspondence between what you say and what you do, the child gets confused. Today, people too often say that they don't want the child to do. They tell the child, no, stop. So this was a big thing that I learned from my teachers. Also, in my experience at Waldorf, the teachers would have, after we ate the bread, we would sit around and have discussion, and the teachers would bring up interesting topics and share their Waldorf teachings. They also would have articles for the parents to take home. Lots of these articles were just amazing. And a lot of the times, what I learned is that it's not enough to say, no, don't do that, stop. They always, always want you to offer an explanation, or what they call an appropriateness to the situation. So this was really cool. And I wrote down some of the, you know, the simple sayings. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it was, it was amazing to take away. They had great sayings and class slogans instead of no and don't do that and stop it. Like, feet on the ground if your child is climbing things. Or throw rocks in the river if your child is, you know, throwing rocks inappropriately, which Wally loves to do. And food at the table. So they would not let the children eat the bread unless they were sitting at the table. They could get up on their own and go explore, but they could not take the food with them. And this is good because it encourages us as parents to not run after our children with our food, which I have to stop myself from doing because I know that Wally's hungry, or I know that Wally didn't eat enough lunch. So a lot of it just really involved the parent and things that I need to hold back to do and let my child learn for himself. So that was something, you know, really hard. Don't run after your kids with food, you know, teach them food at the table. And, you know, even in when we were playing imaginary play, they just, you know, they, it was very like, this is imagination. And then also teach them the appropriateness of the objects at the same time. But the big lesson was that to always offer an explanation and a definition that is true to life. If you're trying to explain to your child something that some sort of manner or some sort of action that you would like to explain to them why. Don't just tell them. Don't just say do it. Don't just you know, say because. So that's been really, really lots of amazing things. There's so much more that I'm going to go over. I don't even know if I'll get to it all, but today's segment is dedicated to Waldorf. And this is a first break song. I picked Lynyrd Skynyrd today. It's a bunch of boys who maybe lost their way, found their way, lost their way, found their way again.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hey, you're back, and I'm back with Growing Good. Today's show is about Waldorf education. I was speaking in the first segment about the fact that I and my son, Wallace Rainbow, were happily and luckily enough able to attend the winter session. I'm definitely going to be going back in the fall to our local Brooklyn Waldorf Academy. I was talking about some of the things that I've learned. So moving on, I'll give you a little bit of a background on what Waldorf is, and this is from Why Waldorf Works. It's a website where you can find Waldorf locations and all the basic principles on Waldorf. Waldorf was developed by Rudolf Steiner. So lots of people call this also the Steiner education. It was developed in 1919. Waldorf education is based on a profound understanding of human development that addresses the needs of a growing child. Waldorf teachers strive to transform education into an art that educates the whole child, the heart and the hands, as well as the head. When you enter a Waldorf school, the first thing you may notice is the care given to the building. The walls are usually painted in lively colors and are adorned with student artwork. Evidence of student activity is everywhere to be found, and every desk holds a uniquely created main lesson book. Now, this was true for us as well. When we would go to class, there was a big auditorium right in front of the entrance, so whenever Wally and I would arrive, we would hear the older kids in the auditorium, and we would peek in lots of times after class. We would go up and watch from the bleachers, and they did so many sport activities that you wouldn't really find in a regular setting. Like this one day, we went upstairs and we watched them. They must have been sixth graders, I believe. And they were all spread out in the auditorium about, I don't know, like 5 feet away from each other with plenty of room for themselves to play. I believe they don't have more than 12 students per class. I think that's the status quo there. And each of these kids were given like a long stick. And they weren't, you know, doing drills. They weren't running laps the way that I did when I was in school. They had these long sticks and they were doing balance tricks with them. So the teacher had his one big stick and he would count off, and basically they would do things like hold the stick all the way to the tippy tippy top of their fingers and try to roll it back behind their head and grab it. And that was gym class. It was so awesome. And Wally obviously was mind blown watching this. So going on, another first impression may be the enthusiasm and commitment that of the teachers you meet. These teachers are interested in the students as individuals, and they are interested in the following questions. This is where the teachers come from. How do we establish within each child his or her own high level of academic excellence? How do we call forth enthusiasm for learning and work, a healthy self-awareness, interest and concern for fellow human beings, and a respect of the world? How can we help pupils find meaning in their lives? Teachers in Waldorf schools are dedicated to generating an inner enthusiasm for learning within every child. They achieve this in a variety of ways. Even seemingly dry and academic subjects are presented in a pictorial and dynamic manner at Waldorf. This eliminates the need for competitive testing, academic placement, and behavioristic rewards to motivate learning. It allows motivation to arise from within and helps engender the capacity for joyful lifelong learning. The Waldorf curriculum is broad and comprehensive, structured to respond to the three developmental phases of childhood, from birth to approximately 6 or 7 years, from 7 to 14 years, and from 14 to 18 years. Rudolf Steiner stressed to teachers that the best way to provide meaningful support for the child is to comprehend these phases fully and to bring age-appropriate content to the children that nourishes healthy growth. So from my own experiences, another thing that I noticed right off the bat and I enjoyed for the whole semester was the wide age range in Wally's class. Parents are allowed to decide for themselves what they're ready for. So there was a mother in my class who had tried the bridge class. It didn't work for her, and so she came back. So Wally was 1.5, but there was children there all the way to 3 or 4 years old in our class. And then also what was amazing is that some of the parents had older siblings in the school, and they were free to go pick them up when their class was done and come and join ours, which was so broad and large, just like an ocean of different children. And I know for me that my son always really just naturally looks up to the older children, and whenever we have play dates with older children, he comes home and amazes me with something new. I mean, I'm talking about from when he was like 8 months old. The first night he came home and rolled over was after we had spent a whole day in the park with two friends of ours who had children that were older than him. And so I've always seen things like that happen. I was also reading from an interview with Hal Heckman, who is a renowned teacher from Denmark in the Waldorf community. And when she was asked what her biggest concerns were for the Waldorf programs, she herself says, "My biggest concern regarding caring for little children is that most initiatives are splitting up children by ages, and children are placed exclusively with their own age group. The children can only mirror themselves, so they become dependent on adults in learning how to approach the world." So what she means by that they can only mirror themselves, meaning they can only mirror children of their own age, so they become dependent on the adults. This can be good in some ways, she says. The adult is the role model for food preparation and cleaning, for example, but to play and become social, for that you need a wider age range of children. So we encountered a lot of that at the Brooklyn Academy. It was awesome. They had an amazing Chinese New Year celebration, and everybody was invited to come, and each grade attended, and each grade was a different Chinese year animal from the calendar. And And I also would always see out in the playground, lots of the classes above us that the children that were there without parents were interacting together in the playground. Not, 11 o'clock is recess for second graders, 12 o'clock is recess for third graders. So that's something else that you can find at Waldorf Community Schools that you wouldn't be able to find that you're in your local districts. Moving on, the other thing that was obvious right away was that in the parent and child program, they teach the parents to be doing something with intention throughout the class. And this was really cool because you felt like you were influencing the learning time of your child and participating in the class without directly engaging your child all the time, which can be very hard for a new parent. And this was allowing Wally to find, you know, his own activities and growing skills along with socializing, but it also kept me feeling a part of the energy in the class. So they always have baskets of knitting materials, and a teacher helper that was there to actually, she taught me how to knit. I mean, I only made 2 potholders, but it took me the whole semester. But so they have sewing materials there and knitting materials there. But as I went further along in the semester, I saw that parents would bring their own clothes that needed mending, which is so great. I mean, how every mom has so many things she doesn't get to mend. So people were bringing jackets and sewing buttons, fixing their children's clothes, or bringing cards that needed to be written and enveloped and stamped and mailed, along with their own knitting projects, because that's, you know, as they got further into it, you can really, really get into it. There was lots of moms there that were making these kind of like fantastical knitted nature scenes. It was really, really amazing and really inspiring. And again, in the classes, we always had discussions and were given articles from the teachers. And of course, I cannot go through all of them because our time is almost up. But I wanted to pick the two that I felt hit me the most. And one was there, and it's so hard to understand. I'm still trying to implement it into my own thinking and my own self, because it's so amazing, but it's so much bigger than me. And it is praise versus acknowledgement. Ooh, so basically, a lot of the times in the discussions, they would say things like, well, you know, don't talk to your child like a clown. Do you want your child to grow up to be a clown? Or, you know, they encourage like not baby talking, talk to your child. And this one day, it really was a big lesson for me. Wally and this other boy were having, you know, their own kind of rivalry, you know, and it happens all the time. So they had been picking on each other all day. And I, of course, was becoming like, you know, very agitated and very stressed out because, you know, I didn't want my son to be hitting this boy, and I didn't want the boy to be hitting my son. But they just, you know, they taught me, no, you just sit there, you know, you observe, you let them work out their own situation. And it was so unfamiliar to me, but in the end, it was so rewarding. I still messed it up. I'll tell you the story. So basically, then later on in the class, during discussion, after I had not interacted, and the parents were discussing around the table, and the children were back to their own play, the boy went over on his own with no, you know, like what, just like they had said, without the me or the other parent intervening, went over to Wally and just hugged him and kissed him on the cheek. And then Wally turned around and hugged him and kissed him on the cheek. And then they split up and they went to play again. And so they had figured out on their own and they had that moment. But I, in my excitement, shouted out, oh my God, that's so good. They kissed. That's so cute. Good, Wally. Good, little boy. And the teacher, you know, sat me down and reminded me again that that was me, you know, interrupting their moment. I don't have to be there to praise Wally. I don't have to say, oh, that's so good that you guys made up and kissed. Because then that's giving them, that's what they mean by giving inappropriate praise. That should have been their moment. It was so beautiful on its own. And by me actually praising it, you know, and making them feel like they were being rewarded, kind of took away just the natural reward, you know, the reward of just life and of loving. So I hope that that example kind of explains what I'm trying to say. But so, you know, they have lots of literature out there on what they mean by praise versus acknowledgement. So And they also have lots of literature out there. With my other one was rough and tumble play. So you're always trying to keep your child safe. But they actually say that a climate of fear surrounding issues of child abuse and child safety has meant that in recent years, children placed in nursery care tend to receive less experience of touch than in previous generations, both in the form of adult touch and the touch and feedback derived from rough and tumble play. But studies with animals have found that rough and tumble play is an essential ingredient of healthy development and socialization in animal groups. Animal pups deprived of physical interaction show withdrawn, antisocial, and aggressive behavior. On the other hand, insufficient sensory experience can result in sensation-seeking or avoidance behavior. And on the other, not allowing children to take reasonable risks and experience the consequences in childhood can make them more prone to indulging in high-risk behavior or, conversely, being overly fearful of taking risks or trying new situations later on. Rough and tumble play in early years provides a wealth of tactile experience as well as developing physical fitness, sensory awareness, regulation of strength, and self-control, and inviting flexible and creative behavior. So that was something else cool. I do a lot more rough and tumble with Wally, or I let him wrestle with our dog Ashley a little bit more than I used to. Still no jumping on the bed, though. No more monkeys jumping on the bed. We're all out of time. There's so much more I wanted to get to, but I will leave you with this. Another article that they sent me home, which has been amazing, was a study that adding imagination play to your child's daily curriculum actually breeds for children that are less aggressive in life and less prone to violence behavior. This is because they are learning to use different parts of their brain and coming up with different solutions through the imagination play that you instill in them now. Later on in life, if they are faced with a problem, their brain will be able to come up with four different solutions to that problem, as opposed to the child who didn't have imagination playtime, who just feels stumped and cannot solve the problem and will strike the child or strike the parent or strike an object. So I've also, I'm so thankful to the Brooklyn Waldorf Academy for that lesson, because I have added 30 minutes of imagination play to our day. And I know that that's hard because I know we have so much to do as parents, but this can be play fishing. We made fish rods out of sticks and felt fish, and I put down like a blue scarf and we pretend fish. Or this can be pretend grocery shopping in your own kitchen, or just using objects in different ways, furniture and objects in different ways. But you want to make sure to tell them that it's imagination time, so that then when it's not imagination time, they know that the chair is not a boat. Anything that you can think of, I've just been like trying to come up with my own things. One night we were at my parents' house and I didn't have, you know, all my stuff, and I found a roll of Christmas wrapping paper in the closet, and I was like, you know what, let's imagine play with this wrapping paper. And I took out a big piece, I had Wally sit on it, and then I made balls with the rest of it, and we played snow. And just for like an hour and a half, it was so much fun. You know, we had so much fun. And I would make snow with the balls, and I'd be like, it's snowing, it's snowing. And Wally would say, it's snowing, it's snowing. And then he'd make me sit on the mat, and then he'd do snow on me, etc. And apparently, not only is this fun and such a great way to spend your time, but there are studies out there that these teachers showed me and gave me literature on that say that children that, you know, have this in their day program are going to become less prone to violence as an adult, as an adolescent. So they are going to be having, the Waldorf Academy is having a benefit. This is just local, but it's also a good initiative for parents. If you want your school to be better, if you wish that there was more there for your child, you can actually initiate a fundraiser. This is a fundraiser that was put together by the parents at the Brooklyn Waldorf Academy with the teachers. It's going to be Saturday, May 19th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. It's their Spring Frolic, and it's a benefit for the Brooklyn Waldorf Academy. They're having a live auction, a chili cook-off, dancing, wine and beer, and they're featuring the String Out String Band, which I actually think is made up of some of the husbands of the Waldorf children. Tickets are $40, and you can purchase tickets in the development office, or call 718-783-3270. You don't have to be a part of the school to go. You can just go and experience a Waldorf event for your own. It's adults only, so you'll be able to talk. I'm sure they're going to be they have lots of discussions. That's what they're all based on, so you'll get a lot from it. You can also email springfrolic@brooklynwaldorf.org. Again, that's $40. I just am so thankful, and I can't wait to be back next fall, and I want you all to go buy a $40 ticket and join the chili cook-off. I mean, I'm sure maybe a lot of the other hosts here could rock that cook-off. Thanks so much. This is Alessandra. Again, we're going to be playing a little bit of Lynyrd Skynyrd for you. We listened to Every Mother's Son during the break, and this is Simple Man. Love and light to you all.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.